Good morning, Mendocino. This is Jeff Blankfort welcoming you to the May 23rd edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners. Today, May 23rd, the eyes of much of the world and certainly of news junkies are on one of two places, one city and one country. The country is Egypt, where today, a year and 4 months after mounting the first protest against Hosni Mubarak in Tahrir Square, the people will be voting for president in what a number of observers are calling the Arab world's first quote-unquote free election, although the choice of candidates is not one that was anticipated when Mubarak resigned. The city that has the world's attention is Baghdad. That's where the second round of talks between what is called the P5 plus one group, made up of the U.S., Britain, France, China, Russia, and Germany, and Iran, began this morning with the former hoping to convince Iran to decommission enough of its nuclear program to keep Israel from launching an attack on its reactors, which Tel Aviv claims pose an existential threat to the Jewish state. That and other aspects of the drive for war in Iran will be the subject for discussion about 20 minutes past the hour this morning, when I speak with Iranian-American professor Sasan Fayez Manesh from Fresno State University. The meeting in Baghdad comes on the heels of a surprisingly upbeat report of a visit to Tehran on Monday by Yuki Amano, the head of the UN nuclear monitoring arm, who described to reporters what appeared to be a significant concession from Tehran, saying that despite unspecified differences, he expected a deal, quote-unquote, quite soon, on arrangements for an investigation into potential military applications of the program. The comments by Amano, Director General of International Atomic Energy Agency, came after his first visit to Iran since his appointment in 2009. Iran's invitation to Amano was announced unexpectedly on Friday, according to the New York Times, and the apparent shift by Tehran, he said yesterday, offered significant signals of Iranian flexibility. That should be welcome news, but it is not likely to be well received by the government of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his agents and lackeys in Washington. That's, of course, AIPAC and the U.S. Congress, respectively. It will also be challenged by the pro-Israel think tanks such as the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, which the press would have us believe are independent institutions, when for all practical purposes they function with AIPAC and Congress as a well-oiled troika. Their most recent goal, apart from implementing the most draconian sanctions ever imposed on a UN member nation, has been to adjust the Obama administration's quote-unquote red line of not allowing Iran to build a nuclear weapon to that of Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's, which is not to allow even the quote-unquote capability of building one. Thus, last Thursday, on the virtual eve of the Baghdad meeting, the House, by a vote of 401-11, that's right, 401-11, passed H.R. 568, which, quote, affirms that it is a vital national interest of the United States to prevent the government of Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapons capability, strongly supports United States policy to prevent the government of Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapons capability, rejects any policy that would rely on efforts to contain a nuclear weapons capable Iran, and urges the president to reaffirm the unacceptability of an Iran with nuclear weapons capability and opposition to any policy that would rely on containment as an option in response to the Iranian nuclear threat, end quote. Of course, the members of the House that voted for the bill knew very well that they were distorting the position of the president, but when it comes to obeying the orders of AIPAC, which drafted the legislation and put it at the top of its agenda and its March convention in Washington, you can throw out what little integrity Congress possesses out the window, even if it paves the way for another bloody war. At the time of the convention, the New York Times reported that, quote, on a critical timing issue, whether any attack against Iran should come at the point it acquired the capability to develop a nuclear weapon rather than later if it manufactured one, Mr. Obama, the paper reported, was conspicuously silent, end quote, and he has been since that time. Given that we are approaching the height of the election season, however, unless there is a major shift on the part of Iran, we can expect him to bow down as well to the Netanyahu AIPAC line. To put further pressure on the White House, the third leg of the troika, Washington Institute for Near East Policy's Managing Director Michael Singh, It was an organization spawned by AIPAC and for such a role in 1985. He just happened to write yesterday on the Foreign Policy Magazine website an article entitled Avoiding the Containment Trap with Iran, and he wrote, quote, instead of emphasizing what we may do if Iran obtains a nuclear weapon or is on the cusp of doing so, the U.S. should focus on denying Tehran the necessary building blocks to reach that point. In other words, a nuclear weapons capability, end quote. By the way, the vote in the House was taken under procedure called, quote, suspension of the rules, which is typically used to pass non-controversial bills. Mendocino's current member of Congress, Mike Thompson, of course, was one of the 401 voting for it, while Lynn Woolsey, retiring from the 2nd Congressional District, which is what we will be next year, and is now up for grabs, was one of those voting against it. That, however, was not even close to being the worst piece of legislation to be passed by the House since my last program. On May 9th, by a 411-2, the House passed H.R. 4133, quote, the United States-Israel Enhanced Security Cooperation Act of 2012, end quote. It's interesting to note, writes Phil Giraldi, former CIA station chief and past Takes on the World guest, what exactly the bill pledges the American people to do on behalf of Israel. He goes on, it obligates the United States to veto resolutions critical of Israel, to provide such military support, quote, as is necessary, unquote, to pay for the building of an anti-missile system, to provide advanced, quote, unquote, defense equipment, including refueling tankers, which are offensive, to give Israel special munitions, that is, bunker busters, which are also offensive, to forward deploy more U.S. military equipment to Israel, to offer the Israeli Air Force more training and facilities in the U.S., to increase security and advanced technology program cooperation, and to extend loan guarantees and expand intelligence sharing, including highly sensitive satellite imagery. Actually, there's even more included, Giraldi writes, and they may have missed the kitchen sink. But the objective is to provide Israel with the resources to attack Iran if it chooses to do so, while tying the U.S. and Israel so closely together that whatever Benjamin Netanyahu does, the U.S., quote, will always be there, end quote, as our president has so aptly put. But the scariest part of the bill, he goes on to say, is its call for, quote, an expanded role for Israel with NATO, including an enhanced presence at NATO headquarters and exercises. Well, he says if Israel becomes part of NATO, which is clearly Congress's intent, Giraldi points out the U.S. and other members will be obligated to come to the aid of a nation that's expanding its borders and is currently engaged in hostilities with three of its neighbors. Israel has also initiated a series of regional wars, and whether NATO membership for Israel would benefit anyone is questionable, but it is something the neocons have been seeking for years, turn Israel's wars into a new crusade against the Muslim world. At the end of his article, Phil Giraldi notes that, quote, if historians 100 years from now seek to explain how a great power committed seemingly intentional national suicide, they will have to look no further than the voting record of the U.S. Congress, end quote. I think it's important that you, the listeners, get a taste of the House discussion on this piece of legislation, and so courtesy of the blog of House Democratic Whip Steny Hoyer, here are his remarks.
As a young person, as chairman of this committee, as ranking member on this committee, and I want to thank him for his leadership on this issue. He has been instrumental. I want to thank my dear friend in whose district I used to live so many years ago, Eliana Ross Layton, the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, Foreign Affairs Committee. Thank her for her leadership and her commitment. She has been a stalwart. Mr. Speaker, at a time when there is great disagreement on a number of important issues, we are reminded today that Democrats and Republicans stand together when it comes to supporting our friend and ally, Israel. I am proud to be a lead co-sponsor of the U.S.-Israel Enhanced Security Cooperation Act, along with my friend and Republican leader, Mr. Cantor, who just spoke. This bill enshrines in law the deeper military and security cooperation that the Obama administration has forged with Israel and made a very high priority. President Obama's predecessor, President Bush, responsible for forging and continuing that relationship, as were his predecessors. Today, with greater uncertainty in the Middle East and the continued pursuit of nuclear weapons by Iran, close security cooperation between the United States and Israel has never been more important. I have visited Israel 12 times, and I've seen firsthand how Israelis have achieved so much with so little. Investment in Israel's security and Israel's success yield real benefits to the United States through shared intelligence, technological exchange, and trade. Investments in Israel and strengthen our security, because our countries share not just values, but strategic interests, including preventing Iran from developing nuclear weapons. Iran, as we all know, has been a destabilizing force in a volatile part of the world so closely linked with global energy supplies and where American troops are stationed. In response, this administration has coordinated with our European allies to impose the strongest sanctions Iran has ever faced. This bill will enable even closer military and security ties with Israel so we can further deter Iran from developing nuclear weapons capability and work together to create and to combat terrorism that threatens both of our countries. I want to recognize in particular the hard work of my friend and colleague, as I said earlier, Howardman, the ranking Democrat on the Foreign Affairs Committee. He and Eliana Ross Layton have been a real team, real partners in this effort, as I and Mr. Cantor have been. Mr. Berman has been instrumental in securing funding for the Iron Dome anti-missile defense system that was jointly developed and will be deployed on Israel's borders to protect against short-range missiles Iran provides to terrorist groups like Hamas and Hezbollah, thousands of those missiles. As Israel continues its pursuit of secure peace, we in Congress will continue to stand together in support of Israel and in recognition of the values and ideals our countries share. This resolution, in part, is so that there will be clarity, that there will be no confusion. There needs to be a clear understanding of all those who would threaten Israel that the United States stands with her, because it is in our, the United States, security interest to do so, and because it is morally and ethically the right thing to do as well. We all hope for two states living side by side peacefully, with families secure, that they can raise their children in a future that will bring peace and prosperity and tranquility in a troubled neighborhood of the world. I urge my colleagues to enthusiastically support this resolution and yield back the balance of my time.
And that was Steny Hoyer, the House Whip and second-ranking member in the House of the Democratic Party. Hoyer understated the number of visits he made to Israel. Actually, the number is 14, not 12. While a handful of House members merely voted present, only Michigan's John Dingell, the longest-serving member of Congress since 1955, with a large Arab-American constituency, and Texas's Ron Paul had the courage to vote against it, and Paul was the only one to speak from the floor. He said, quote, "While I absolutely believe that Israel and any other nation should be free to determine for itself what is necessary for its national security, I do not believe that those decisions should be underwritten by U.S. taxpayers and backed up by the U.S. military. This bill," Paul went on, "states that it is the policy of the United States to, quote unquote, reaffirm the enduring commitment of the United States to the security of the state of Israel as a Jewish state," end quote. "However, according to our Constitution, the policy of the United States government should be to protect security of the United States, not to guarantee the religious, ethnic, or cultural composition of a foreign country. In fact, our own Constitution prohibits the establishment of any particular religion in the U.S. Quote, "More than 20 years after the reason for NATO's existence, the Warsaw Pact has disappeared." Paul continued, "This legislation seeks to find a new mission for that anachronistic alliance, the defense of Israel, and reads like a dream for interventionists in the military-industrial complex. As I have said many times, NATO should be disbanded and not expanded," end quote. Republican Libertarian Representative Ron Paul, no longer a candidate for president, telling it like it is, which is why I try to what I try to do here. "Since everything you have heard so far, which I believe is critical to the future of this country and the world, has been blanked out by the mainstream media and NPR. If they presented what I report to you here twice a month, I wouldn't have to make this issue my focus. You can add to this list a paper issued by the RAND Corporation last week, one of the few think tanks that's not under the sway of Israel and the pro-Israel establishment, which argue that, quote, diplomacy and economic sanctions are better suited than military action to prevent the emergence of a nuclear-armed Iran, that Israeli security will be best served by military restraint combined with greater U.S.-Israeli cooperation, that the Iranian people offer the surest hope for a future Iran that's more amenable to U.S. interests. An Israeli or American attack on Iranian nuclear facilities that went on would make it more, not less, likely that the Iranian regime would decide to produce and deploy nuclear weapons. Such an attack would also make it more, not less, difficult to contain Iranian influence. That's the RAND Corporation. And finally, one last item that speaks to another aspect of the problem. It's from the mainstream media, from the Washington Post, in fact, which today published an editorial calling for NATO intervention in Libya. The author is Walter Pincus, the veteran intelligence reporter for the Post, whose opinions are not sought or heard for on the not sought for or heard on the Sunday news programs. Not when he writes articles with a headline that asks the question: is the United States going too far to help Israel? Should the United States put solving Israel's budget problems ahead of its own, asked Pincus at the beginning of the article. In answering his own question, he writes that, quote, when it comes to defense spending, it appears the United States already is. Pincus was referring to the decision by the House Military Appropriations Committee Subcommittee to approve nearly $1 billion for Israeli and joint Israeli-U.S. missile defense programs on top of the $3.1 billion already allocated for Israel. This funding level is the highest ever appropriated in a single year for these life-saving programs, said Representative Steve Rothman, Democrat from New Jersey, a member of the committee and a committed Israeli firster. Since some $680 million of the $947 million will go to the Iron Dome short-range anti-missile program, a result of legislation initiated by Representatives Liana Ross-Leitinen, the Cuban-born Republican from Florida, and Howard Berman, the California Democrat, who Steny Hoyer hailed a moment ago. He's the chair and senior Democrat on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. If you look on YouTube, you will find a speech by Berman speaking before a Jewish audience in his home in San Fernando Valley, claiming that his goal in entering Congress was to help Israel. He has more than achieved it, and he was not alone.